Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
The AFL draft is getting closer by the day, and we are back here on the draft, the Herald Sun Footy Podcast AFL draft spin-off. We had a couple of weeks off. We had a bit of a recharge. Myself, Jordan Pinto, and Dan Batten had a bit of a break. I found Dan again. Dan, welcome back. But finally, now we've had some listeners. We've had some pretty good feedback about the show, but we now finally got some credibility on the show. Chris Kavanagh, the AFL reporter / draft guru from the Herald Sun, finally joining the AFL Draft podcast. He'll be here for the next 3 weeks as we build up to November 28. Cav, welcome to the show.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here for the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's a big show. We've got plenty to catch up on. It's been a big couple of weeks. You released your Phantom Draft, a pretty good one too. We'll discuss that. We'll discuss any sort of updated mail and what could happen come the end of November. Also going to look at our top five tools for this draft. We know we've discussed on the show previously, it's a bit short on tools, especially after you get outside the first round. But we'll look at what could pop up later as well. And of course, there's a few questions floating through on Twitter. If you do want to be part of the show in the future, get us at us on Twitter at @DanBatten_, at @JordanPinto with a zero, and at @ChrisKavanagh1. Dan, haven't seen you for 2 weeks. How are you?
I'm well. Well, did the Never Spongy over in Queenstown. There was there for 5 days, so fully recharged. And yeah, you know, with those things, you're nervous for 3 months before doing it, but it was good to get it out of the way. A little bit like your Phantom draft there, Cav. Were there any nerves for you in that sense before it dropped?
A little bit, but I'd consulted quite a few clubs on it before I put it together, and I was pretty happy with it in the end. Most of the feedback was pretty good. I had one club text me and say I might have missed out one player who we can get to, but most clubs said that it was pretty close to what they were thinking at this stage. Of course, that can change with live trading. Picks are still getting traded, as we know, and can be until the draft. So, I think it turned out okay though.
Looking forward to getting to that one club. But, I mean, first off, who's the most difficult club to read? Who is the side this year that clubs are just struggling to really get a grasp of who they're going to take?
Well, I think it's the same club as every year, and that's Essendon. Currently got
loaded question.
Currently got pick four. No one knows exactly what they're going to do with it. Obviously, yeah. Elijah Sardis has been discussed as that top three or four player all year by pretty much every club. But there's some thoughts that Essendon might do something a bit different, as they sometimes do, and take someone that others might not have as a top five. So, I'm not sure that Essendon need another midfielder like Sardis. There could be other players that they might target at that pick.
Dan, you might have, you talked to me the other day about who the other player could be at the Bombers in that mix.
Well, yeah, your guess is as good as mine at the moment. It's open to probably about four or five different names. Mateus Philip, who's one who has popped up, who they have shown a strong interest in. I believe they've interviewed him a few times in the lead-up. It would make a bit of sense. It would be a little bit of a surprise, I guess, for them to not go Sardis. But what Philip, who can offer as a taller 190-centimeter midfielder who can go forward as well, good in the contest, very clean with his ball use, but also very dynamic and has a really long kick as well. So if they're looking for something a bit different, then he would suit. Even a guy like Elijah Hewitt has been brought up as being at least linked to the Bombers in the past week or two. But yeah, then guys like Cam McKenzie, Bailey Humphrey, who is more that game-breaking X-factor player as well. So yeah, but you'd say Sardis is probably still the favorite, but yeah, who knows at this stage. And I think their pick is definitely going to, as you can see from Cavs Phantom Draft, or even Ruben Gimby as well, another who I didn't mention who's in their mix. But yeah, that pick that the Bombers have, it's going to shape the rest of the top 10. If they don't go Sardis, well, could Sardis slide a bit more, past Gold Coast potentially? If they go Humphrey, where does Sardis and others and Gimby land? So yeah, it throws up plenty of machinations as to if Essendon take someone, then it's going to have a chain reaction for the rest of the top 10.
Of course, you can see the top 25 Chris Kavanagh's Phantom Draft on heraldsun.com.au right now, updating that closer to the date as well. Matheus Filippo, Dan, you know I love him. We had him here on the show. It was great a few weeks back. And check that as well, the older podcast. But not everyone loves him, Cav. You had him sliding back all the way to 12. And we know he's divided clubs with his really strong personality. Andrew Capel over here, and the story on him recently, the three generations of Filippos. We know his dad, Sam, played three games for the Dogs, but was a legend over here in the sample. An intense character. His training, Dan, we spoke to him about what he's doing already, is at the level it needs to be. But Chris, he's split clubs a little bit with his strong personality through those interviews. Did you think he slides all the way back if someone doesn't jump that early?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I had him at pick 12, going to the Bulldogs where his father played in my Phantom Draft. But a few clubs I've spoken to have said he's top four or five on talent. Yeah. But he did rub a few clubs up the wrong way during some of the combine interviews that he did. He's got enormous belief in himself. Maybe a little bit over the top was the feedback that some clubs gave me. You need to have a bit of drive and determination to be a top AFL player. But there was a few little. One club said to me, "He's a bit of a different cat," which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But a few clubs weren't too sure on him after that. But he's still certainly got a lot of fans in the top 10 there.
Yeah, and how locked on, Dan and I have discussed this a couple of times. A lot of questions, obviously, about what North do at 2 and 3. I think we sort of decided on a couple of weeks ago that, everything points towards the Sheasel and Wardlaw, which is what you had too. Do you think there's any sort of scope that'll change? I know Sardis obviously is still in that conversation, but whether he's a bit... not a liability, but the defensive side of his game is obviously not what a Wardlaw is, and maybe North can't take a risk like that. But do you think Wardlaw and Sheasel are the two there, those real key picks for the top 10?
Yeah, I think you can lock those two in. As much as Wardlaw and Sardis are very good mates, both from the Oakland Chargers, and they would sort of make a nice package deal. Wardlaw and Sheasel are different type of players, which would suit North well. I mean, Sheasel's just he's got the most X factor of any player in this year's draft pool, and North need a spark there in attack as much as they do in the midfield as well. So I think that is the best combination for them.
Dan, you've had a long look at what the Eagles do, what's going to happen over there in Perth. They'll be hoping Ruben Gimby falls through to their first pick, but do you think that happens? Cav had him going to the Suns. What do you think the Eagles do if Gimby doesn't get through? And the Blues obviously will have a big say in what they do, picking before them at 11. Cav had Oliver Holland going to the Blues, which would then allow Jed Buslinger fall through. We still think the Eagles are going to go homegrown?
I think so. I mean, they traded back. I think it would have been in their best interest, or in their interest, really, that they were looking at those at least two or three WA talents with their selections. And I think it's going to be, quite interesting where they go with, obviously, even Kevin, our draft intel piece this week. I mean, Ed Allen could even be a top 10 pick, the big bolter of this year's draft. If Gimby is taken by Essendon or Carlton, for instance, do they just pull the trigger on Ed Allen a bit earlier? Obviously, it's a little bit of a speculative pick. in the top 10, but he has tremendous upside with his speed and his all-round athletic traits at 194 centimetres as well. A guy could potentially play outside, inside, mid, or even off a halfback flank. So I think it's probably going to be one or two of those. They've also got picks in the 20s as well, where you'd say a guy like a Darcy Jones would come into the equation there as a small forward. Obviously, the comparisons to Caleb Daniel for him. But yeah, it's really going to depend whether Gimby does get picked up. I think at Essendon or Gold Coast pick, they seem to have shown interest in him. And Cav had Gimby going to the Suns at six. Do you think, Cav, just on the Suns, do you think they're set to pick Gimby, or do you think it may depend how Essendon go and there could be other players in their mix as well?
Yeah, it probably depends on how Essendon go, but I think it's probably between Gimby and Humphrey for the Suns. Yeah. At this stage, both sort of types of players that they could very much do with. I mean, they could do with a few different sorts of players across the ground, but those two are definitely right in the frame there. They very much like Gimby, as quite a few clubs do, including the Bombers before them.
Dan, Darcy Jones, now you pretty much probably try to take a cut of his new contract, I reckon. But now you've been pushing him here on the draft. Listeners will know Dan's been pushing his name every episode if you listen back. Just on West Coast, Ed Allen, not saying they definitely can't afford to butcher this draft given where their list is at, but with so many of those high-end picks, you talk about Ed Allen being a little bit speculative, they can sort of afford to do that. Take a punt on talent, especially probably a homegrown one when they've got those other picks in that first 25 as well. So Harry Barnett, obviously the best ruckman in the draft. SA lad over here would probably fit in the Eagles too at some point, depending on what happened later in those 20s. You guys wrote about him, I think, in the draft intel column, which you can also look on heraldsun.com every Thursday as we build up to the draft, the latest draft mail and news at lunchtime every Thursday. So get on and check that out every week. Keep up to date. But Harry Barnett, Cav, and we over here, we're talking a lot about could he get to the Crows when they had pick 23? Obviously, they've traded that out. Now they don't have that, and the feedback we got was they'd probably be off the board by then anyway. A lot of interest, and the Crows were interested, but obviously the way they traded, they won't be able to do that. But where do you see him going? Obviously, guys, ruckman, young ruckman in the past have tend to slide a little bit. Where do you see him falling on the first or second night?
I think he's probably more likely second night. I don't think anyone's going to take him first round. He's probably in the 20s. He could potentially slide to the 30s. He's clearly the best ruckman in it. It's just a question of who wants a ruckman and who's got picks around that area. A few clubs have already stocked up on some young rucks on their lists, and a few haven't, though. So, but some of those clubs that haven't don't have picks in the 20s. So, he's a club said to me that he's a bit inconsistent, but his best is very good. And I think that, sums him up. He's the best of what is a relatively weak group of tools and rucks in this year's draft.
Yeah, he's a good side.
Also includes Nick Madden and the likes of Max Noble as well.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good size. He's really built into his frame already, which not all young tool prospects do at his age, and but still so good on the ground as well with his hands. So a lot to like about him. Now, Cav, it's almost time for you to tell us about that player that you left out of the Fandom Draft. We'll take a short break here on the draft. We'll reveal that next. All right, Cav, what did you get wrong? Who did you miss out? Who's going to surprise us? Who's going to feature in the next one? We'll talk about maybe some of the guys who could push into the 25 after, but who's the player that you might have left out of that first one?
The day that we published the first Fandom Draft a couple of weeks ago, I got a text from a club that I hadn't spoken to in consultation with the Fandom Draft, but they said to me, did you forget Elijah Hewitt from WA? which I didn't forget him. But he's another one of these players that has divided a lot of clubs.
Yeah.
So I think some have him sort of 15 to 25, others have him mid to late 20s. Everyone agrees he's probably a top 30 pick, but it depends who wants that sort of player. He can win a lot of the footy. He's as he did in the national championships, but he's also got a few limitations. Clubs sort of say he's not perfect. He's another one of those players that had a few question marks over him from some clubs after some interviews at the combine. So that was the reason that I sort of had him out. But after a little bit of feedback, I think maybe he's in that back end of the 20. Potentially a club like GWS, who we weren't particularly sure who they were going to go with. They have those three late picks in the late teens and early 20s. So, maybe a club like them might look at him as a big-bodied sort of inside midfielder who can win a lot of the footy.
Do we think they'll use those picks to come back in higher again? Can we see that happening in the lead-up or on the night?
I think they'd like to, but there's a lot of clubs that would like to move up, and there's not many sellers that want to give away top 10 picks. Sydney's in the same boat with a couple of picks in the teens there that they'd like to move up higher, but I can't see that happening. It's basically now it's down to on the night. If there's a club that doesn't have who they want at pick 8, 9, 10, they might trade back and do that, but at this stage, it's hard to see too many sellers from top 10, 12 picks.
Just on Sydney and GWS, I think that's a very, I guess, an intriguing part of the draft this year. Obviously, you go to even your Phantom draft, Melbourne at pick 14, then it's Sydney 15, GWS 16, Collingwood 17. Collingwood's a bid, 17. Then back to Sydney, and then GWS and GWS again. I mean, are we going to see some foxing, do you think, Cav, from those two clubs or even from Collingwood in the middle there as that little bit of a byplay on the night, you think?
It's interesting what GWS is going to do with that. I mean, they can just basically cherry pick whoever they want, if they're 10 spots higher than other clubs would have them. They've got nothing to lose because they've got so many picks in the top 22 or thereabouts there. So, it'll be interesting to see how the Giants play it and whether they do move up or whether they just take whoever they want for the rest of the draft, really.
Another thing I think would be interesting for the Giants, there's a bit of word that Harry Rowson could attract a bid inside the first round. And if it's, say, Sydney or Collingwood that do bid on him, it means that GWS probably is going to have to use one of their selections in the first round to actually match that. So, for instance, if it's a bid from Sydney, which I think is the pick before GWS at the end of the first round, then in order to get that pick for Rowston, they'll have to match. It may be losing their start of second round pick. So that could have some ramifications. Obviously, West Coast would then go and have the first pick of the second round. So it'd be interesting to see if that does happen, especially if Sydney are the ones to do it to their, their arch rivals there in the Battle of the Bridge. But, have you seen Harry Rowson, Cav? I mean, do you think he's one who could potentially be bidded on a bit earlier than some first thought?
Potentially. I mean, he's had a pretty good year, Giants Academy prospect. But, I didn't have him in the original Phantom. I think he's maybe still just out of that top 25. But, it certainly wouldn't surprise too much if he did sneak into the late teens there. In the market, the way it is.
Yeah, we know sort of once you get out that top 10, 15, or probably 10, clubs are pretty split on the next long big group, really. Yeah. Rowson's one. I had a club tell me last week that they didn't have Rowson in the 40, and we're talking in their 40, and we're talking about the bids. So It's going to be interesting second night for sure. And another one going to the bids, Max Michelani, obviously big name over here. The Crows, father-son prospect. Cavie didn't have him in the 25, but he probably, you know, the bid probably comes between 20 and 40 or 35, you'd think. Has some fans, I think, in the 20s, but in the teens, sorry. But I guess we know sometimes father-son prospects where they go in the draft doesn't truly reflect the talent order. Sometimes I let them through, but yep. What are you hearing on the Michelani bid? Didn't have him at coming in the 25. I know the Dogs are fans of Michelani, have some interesting picks that you know, does it happen at 23 or such or a bit later? What are you hearing for Crows fans out there?
Yeah, I didn't have him in the 25, but he's certainly not far behind. The clubs I sort of spoke to said that 25 to 35 range is where they think he'll land. And I think that's sort of the impression that Adelaide got when they decided to nominate him as well, that he'd be in that sort of range. So they obviously moved their first pick back anyway. So it's worked out well for them. But I think he's somewhere in the mix there. He's a pretty good player.
And Dan, since we spoke last year on the draft, speaking about the Crows, they decided not to nominate Isaac Keeler as an NJ prospect in the draft. We know they couldn't match a bit anyway inside the first 40 picks for him, which was the expectation. But obviously, they haven't done. They won't have dibs on him at all, even after 40. But we know if he didn't get drafted and got through, it automatically he'd be. End up on their list, and list spots Crows just don't have them at the moment. So Keeler, another one that who could go anywhere on talent, again is a top 20 pick, you'd think, but a lot of question marks about him. Damn, you surprised to see the Crows not nominate him, and have you thought about him a bit more? I know you had him higher at one point on your list, you dropped him down a bit, he's come up and down. I think it's probably similar to all of us.
Yeah, it was Lumi is one of the sort of the fascinating ones that could he miss out and then the Crows pick him up. But as you said, they don't really have the list spots at the moment. They might even just take the one pick at the draft and then use the other two for re-rooking sort of thing. I think Brett Turner was sort of in that mid-season draft. He was in that sort of boat where he could be re-rookied because obviously you need to have the three picks at both the national and rookie drafts. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, would a club like Frio, I think, you know, you look at them, I think they're at 30 at the moment. That might come in a little bit or out a bit with bids, but you look at a club like them, they would really suit Keeler, I think, as that sort of athletic forward. Obviously he's not perfect. He's got to work on his running capacity, I think, and that's probably why I ranked him a little bit lower. Probably because he'd be shorter stints in the ruck and not necessarily that Paddy Ryder type that he had sort of been billed as a little bit earlier in the year. But yeah, it's at the same time there's still plenty of talent there, and it was a little bit at first you're like, oh, why aren't they nominating him just in case? But even if he does slip past the 40, they can still select him as a regular pick, you know, not as an NGA prospect. And maybe they think that he does attract a bit inside in the 40 anyway, which, you know, essentially means that they lose rights to him. So yeah, it, on the surface, it looks perplexing, but I think they have their reasons behind it.
I think the Crows think that he will get a pick in a bit inside 40, and they weren't going to get him anyway. But he could go anywhere from late teens to into the 30s there. He's running, and his testing at the combine wasn't great, and his competitiveness is the other knock there a little bit. The Crows do like those very sort of competitive beast sort of players if you look at their team. So, I think that's the issue there. But someone will have a crack on him because he does have a lot of upside, and tall forwards that are athletic like him don't grow on trees. So,
especially in this draft. Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, someone said to me they wouldn't be surprised if he played zero games, but they also wouldn't be surprised if he came out and played 300 games as well. Mm. So could really go either way with him. But speaking of tools, we are going to look quickly at our top five tools of the draft. We don't think we'll be too indifferent, but we're going to have a look at the different positions as we build up over the next 3 weeks. But Cav, anyone else before we take another quick break? Who's on the edge of that 25? Have you, obviously you're working towards your next big fandom draft closer to the date. Who have you got working in there, or who could push in?
There's heaps that are not far behind that. Even like a Tom McCallum from Tassie. He's sort of around that mark too. We discussed Isaac Keeler. There's quite a few that are in that 20s range that could come in, and obviously Elijah Hewitt will probably push him into the final Phantom draft in a couple of weeks because he's shaping as more of a top 25 chance than maybe he was a month ago. So
just one more that was outside of that. I'm sure Essendon fans are keen to sort of know where Alwyn Davey will attract a bit, especially because Essendon have that pick at pick 22. I mean, he was outside that 25. Are there any clubs that you think that would pounce on him? And I guess why wouldn't a club pounce on bid on him before their pick at 22 to wipe out Essendon's pick there?
He's another one who divides clubs a lot too. I have one club tell me that he wasn't in their 40 as well. And I've had others say he's definitely top 20. So, a lot of those bids don't come as early as we think they are, would come for some of those father sons anyway. So, I had him outside of the 25, but he wasn't far outside of the 25. Essendon are trying to move their pick back at 22 because they're worried that he's right in that middle range of pick 22, so he could come before that and then they lose that pick. So if they can move that back of 10 spots and save themselves from losing that pick and trade in to get some other picks, then they will, I think.
Again, as we said before, we can check out the full top 25 Chris Kavanagh's Phantom Draft on the heraldsun.com.au right now, and we're updating that close to the date. Plenty of content. We've got plenty to come over the next few weeks in the build-up to the draft. We'll be back here on the drafts after the break to talk about the top five tools and look at some of your questions for the week. All right, Dan, you kick us off with your top five tools. As we said, we're not flushed with options to pick from here, but what's your list looking like? And we'll see where we differ.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's changed throughout the year. I think if you'd asked me 2 or 3 months ago, it would have been Jed Buslinger is the clear number one for tools, but obviously he's been out for a fair bit of the year. But I still think, these five tools, they could all feature in the first round potentially. And, they've all, got their own really high end attributes. And obviously I think number one for probably all of our lists, Aaron Cadman, who it could be the number one pick in this month's draft. Love what he's been able to do in the back half of the year. He's not necessarily that bash and crash contested marking forward. He's probably more like a roaming forward, like a Jeremy Cameron. He's even had some tutelage from Jeremy Cameron as well this year. So he's moved up even into inside the top five of my personal rankings. So he's number one, takes the number one spot for the tools. Number two, that name that I mentioned before, Jed Buslinger, the intercept king of this draft class, great overhead mark. Still, I think there's probably a bit with his one-on-one stuff that we didn't get to see as much this year. But I think he will develop into that. And he's far and away the best key defender in this draft, I think. Then we've got Matt Jefferson. Obviously, we know what he did in that championships game, kicked the 7 goals. Just a consistent goal kicker. He's more probably your stand and deliver forward, your mark goal player. You might only have 7 disposals, kick 3 goals, whereas Cabin might have 18, 19 and kick 1 or 2. So he's at 3. Number 4, we've got a couple of key defenders to finish off. Loved what Lewis Hayes has done this year, particularly at the championships. His intercepting was first class. And I think he offers a little bit of what a Darcy Moore type, where he can intercept, play off a man, but also used the ball really well in offense as well. And he's quite tall, probably needs to add a little bit of size to him, but quite mobile, moves like a small as well at 197 centimeters. And then you've got the athletic freak, Josh Weddle, who I think could be playing footy, senior footy next year. You know, he can play on a range of talls and smalls. He's only, I think, 191, 192, which I think had him a little bit further back in my rankings earlier in the year. But what he was able to do at the combine just showed that he really is just so, I guess, gifted athletically. So he'll be able to match up really well. And he's so an ultra competitor. Kept Aaron Cabin very quiet for the majority of that game, that final championships game. So he rounds out the five, Phil. And Jordan, I'll swing it back to you. Any different from that list?
Well, just on Josh Weddle, I think we had a story online. I'm not sure who it was. Was it in your Intel column or?
That was,
Alex Rance.
Cavs Mail.
Alex Rance. Tell us about it, Cav.
It's a big rap. One club I was speaking to said that he does have some similar traits to Alex Rance. Might not be as good, obviously. Rance was a pretty good player for the Tigers. But, certainly, quite athletic, which Rance was. Can play small or tall, which Rance could as well. It's definitely some similarities there with Weddle, who's got a lot of fans from anywhere from sort of 12 to 25, 30. The latest, you'd think.
Yep, Dan, I don't have anyone real different. Well, if we're going tall, I'd have Harry Barnett in there. I think he's got to be in the five if he's the best ruckman. He's a pretty good one too. So I've had him in there in my five, but I had the other names that you mentioned. Cav, anyone else different in yours? We know you've got Lewis Hayes, and we did our consensus rankings a few weeks ago. Check that out too. You had Lewis Hayes a bit higher than Dan and I. What is your top five? Any really difference?
Pretty similar, but I do have Hayes in there. Yeah, I've got Cabman at one, Buzzlinger at two. If West Coast don't pounce on Buzzlinger with pick eight, then St Kilda and Carlton are quite interested in him, I believe. Matthew Jefferson at three. Melbourne's he'd be their preferred option to take sort of Ben Brown's spot once he moves on, but St Kilda's also got some interest in Jefferson, I think. Lewis Hayes, I've got at four, who's right up there with Buzzlinger as the best key defenders in the pool. Again, he's more of that intercepting type, but he's somewhere in that 12 to 25 range as well. Brother of Port Adelaide's ruckman Sam, very different sort of player though. And then I did have Max Gruzeski in at pick 25 in my phantom draft, who has got some fans, particularly North Melbourne. I think Collingwood's very much into him as well. Both clubs that have got picks in the 20s, so I think he'll be in that sort of mid-20s range. Hasn't played a lot of footy this year from the Oakley Chargers. Did a PCL knee injury, which sort of missed a chunk of the season, but what he was able to do in the space of a few minutes in that last game for Vic Metro was pretty special. Can play at either end and take a good contested mark. So I've got him at number five.
Yeah, very good.
Character. I was going to say a super character as well. Obviously helped out Lewis Hayes, the other name we mentioned throughout this list at the combine when he was sort of stumbling down on that in that 2K. He sacrificed his own run, and I'm sure he got plenty of winners. Plenty of fans from clubs from that act.
Yes, Dan, we know you took that viral video. You don't have to tell us all again. Some very good reporting from you. Just on mine, I didn't have too much different. Cabman 1, Buzzlinger 2, Barnett 3, Hayes at 4, and Jefferson at 5. Just quickly before we get to those questions, Cav, you had Oliver Hollands. You know, the Blues do like him. Mm-hmm. Buzzlinger, though, they obviously need a key defender as well. If it between those two, think it's Hollands they go for?
I mean, Hollands has got some other fans in that range as well, as does Buzzlinger. So it's really, it depends on what other clubs do before them. But I think it would be, I think they want to add some run, and Hollands is arguably the best runner in the draft pool. So he'd be the favourite. Ed Allen's also got some interest from Carlton if West Coast don't take him first. So, but Buslinger is also in the mix there, I'd say, because they do need a key back. Lost Liam Jones, obviously. So, be keen to bolster the defensive stocks as well.
Time for questions. Usually it's Pinto doing the questions, but I'm going to throw one his way. Obviously, if you can get in touch with us, if you want to ask a question, Dan_Jordan_Pinto0 or Chris_Kavanagh1. Corey Sutton asks, would like to know your thoughts. Should Adelaide try and trade back into the first, second round using next year's first or second rounder to get a Keeler or Barnett, or keep next year's in the hope of getting Jack DeLeon or Ashton Moore?
Yeah, Corey, it's a good question. A lot of Crows fans are talking about similar. But we know next year's draft is looming as a stronger one, and there's some really good SA names. Talks about DeLeon and Moy there. There's also Will Patton, who's like a Will Day 2.0. Patrick Weckett as well, we've spoken about, Dan, here on the show, who could play cricket for Australia potentially if he follows that path as well, but still hasn't chosen. So I think given what's coming next year as a whole, and then what's coming locally too, I wouldn't, maybe if someone they really like, they rate in their top 10, get through the back end 20s, then maybe they do that. But I think there's probably enough to suggest that they've built up next year a little bit more to really grab a couple of high-end SA talents. If they're there, we know the Crows in the past don't just look homegrown either as well. So, Corey, I wouldn't, if I were the Crows, unless, someone they really rank in the top 10 gets through, I think they really should focus on next year's. Take Michael Annie, take what some view as a top 15 talent and be pretty happy with that, and Isaac Rankin through the door. At Sim67 on Twitter says, if Saints miss McKenzie, who do they target? Obviously, Cam McKenzie, we spoke about, you had him going to the Saints, picking their academy guy off the cusp in the top 10. If it's not him, who do you think it will be for the Saints?
Yeah, it really depends on who others pick beforehand. I'm not sure that McKenzie is going to get picked before pick 10. I'm not sure that he's sort of pick 7, 8, 9 range, but
yeah.
But I think the Saints have got a few others ahead of him if they're available. Potentially like a Buslinger would be perfect for St Kilda, add a bit of strength down back. There'd be, like if Ginby was available, if Humphrey was available still, the Saints would be all over those type of plays, you'd think, as well. So, yeah, it really depends on who goes first, but they've got a few options there that are all very good players.
Yep, Dan, one for you to finish off. We discussed it a little bit at the top of the show. Carl Pfeiffer is a West Coast man. He's getting worried about Ruben Ginby. He wants the Eagles to pick him at 8. Says, what are the chances of him bolting into the top 5 and the Eagles missing out?
Well, from Cavs mail, it looks like it's, there is reason to be concerned there. I mean, obviously, Gold Coast, Cav had him going to Gold Coast in his Phantom draft, and I think Essendon is also a threat as well to take Gimby. But I don't think you should be too alarmed, though. I think there's still quite a lot of WA talent that the Eagles could get. Obviously, Buslinger, who we've mentioned, Elijah Hewitt, and Ed Allen as well. So I don't think it's not going to be the end of the world if you miss out on Gimby. There's still plenty of local talents, or even other talents as well. I mean, I don't think, obviously, it's been well documented there is some threat, go-home factor for some of the Vic Metro guys, but there's still plenty of other talents I think that they could certainly look to outside of the WA boys. But you'd say it's probably most likely going to be two WA talents that they do pick up with their first two selections in the first round.
Do we think can we see the Eagles using the heap of picks they've got early to trading up to secure someone like Ginby? Or do we think there's enough of them just to hold off?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, obviously they have, I think it's 4 or is it 5 inside the first sort of 20, first 26 selections. But I mean, you've still got guys like Darcy Jones a bit later. Yeah. Is it worth sacrificing, a guy like him who's obviously a WA talent, to move up a couple of places. Yeah, and would those other clubs be willing to give away that top pick? Yeah. It seems like clubs are pretty unwilling in the top 10, especially to give away selections. And plenty of people want to move. Plenty of clubs want to move in. So, yeah, you'd say it's probably unlikely, but who knows? You know, I think there was talk Essendon potentially might wanted to actually move out of the 10. Yeah, you know, who knows what they're doing at this stage.
Yes, very interesting. It's going to be a very interesting couple of days. It's going to be a very interesting couple of weeks as we build up to it. Plenty to talk about over the coming shows. Cav, thanks for coming on, and we'll obviously be back over the next couple of shows as we build up to November 28. Dan, a pleasure as always. Again, listeners out there, heraldsun.com.au, advertiser.com.au, you can see Cavs full fandom draft, the first 25, how the picks might fall. Plenty other content as well. Also got a mock draft, Dan, Cav, and myself. Next week on Monday, you can watch a live video on those websites. We're going to play your club's recruiters. We're going to split the clubs up. We're going to take a turns of picking for each club to see where we land and see, give another idea of what could happen and how things could fall on November 28 and 29. We look forward to that. We look forward to your company here next week on The Draft.